Facing challenges and overcoming setbacks is part of doing business. Whether you have the expertise to survive them or not could mean the difference between success or failure. Welcome to We Are Women, featuring revealing conversations that provide invaluable insights into the success secrets of female masterminds. A must listen for every entrepreneurial woman. Now here's your host, Janine Vosper.
Hi, it's Janine Vosper, and welcome to this episode of the We Are Women podcast. I have the wonderful Kate Smith. Kate creates visuals for businesses that showcases their unique offering and helps them resonate with their ideal customers. That's the end of the bio she sent me. That's it. So we're going to have to do a dive down into this to learn more about Kate, because I really want Kate to shine today. So, Kate, it's all yours now. You can tell me about Kate Smith.
Thank you, Janine. Okay, I guess I'll give a bit of more overview of my business. I'm a graphic designer, so I create logos and websites and signs and business cards, and everything visual and client-facing that your business needs is something that I do. I specialize in service-based businesses because I believe that experiences are kind of the spice of life. So I'd rather support businesses creating amazing experiences. And I guess, shall I go into a bit more personally, Janine?
Yeah, definitely go into more personal. And what we're going to be talking about is, you know, the importance of branding, which is how to do that, which is really relevant to anyone that's in business. But it also is the emotional and the who you are and all of this thing that you look into. So, yes, we do want some more about who you are, Kate.
Great. So I was born in a small town in New South Wales. I grew up in a place called Guyra. I studied design close by in Armidale and soon after moved away to have my first job. I then took a big leap and I moved to Canada. This was kind of the start of, I think, becoming myself in a lot of ways. And I traveled for about the next, I would say, 8 years. I didn't really live in Australia full time, and that all sort of ended with the pandemic, which brought me back to Australia, where I started a new journey and launched my business full time.
Cool. And I love the country area of New South Wales where you grew up. I know that area reasonably well. Yeah, we've had that conversation. We've had a couple of other conversations. Beautiful Armidale. I had close connections with somebody and some people in Armidale for quite a few years. I really do love it. And it killed a duck out on the university grounds. Nothing to do with what we're going to talk about. It flew into the side of my car. It was tragic. What am I going to do with this duck? I was just driving around showing someone.
Oh, dear. There are a lot. And I used to hang out at a park in Armidale. That's where I studied design. Yeah. So, and there was always this one duck with one leg, which I'm sure was a casualty of a similar kind. I'd always try and make sure he got the bread that I, you know, would inevitably throw out the window.
Yeah, it was very stressful, traumatizing with this poor duck. The other thing, the other memory of the area, and saying that with Guyra, for those that don't know, it is the highest elevation caravan park in Australia.
It is. Wow, you really do know my area. That's our one claim to fame.
And we were staying down there one time as part of a, you know, 8-day thing, driving around with when our children were younger. And it was September, because I remember it was grand final and we're meeting some friends there. And when we'd hired a caravan on site, and when we got there, they said, oh, it's not available now because the pipes froze overnight and then they burst. This is September. I'm going, oh, it's going to be a warm night then in Guyra.
Classic Guyra problem that happened to me regularly as a child. Yeah. I've actually seen it snow in January in Guyra.
My goodness me.
Which is just outrageous.
It absolutely is. Pretty little town. That whole area through there is gorgeous. So if anyone wants to get on the New England Highway and travel down through the Stones and Glen Innes and mm-hmm. all through that area. It's I highly recommend it. But coming from there, that's, you know, that is a small town. And so at school, was this something that you went, oh, graphic design, I think I could do that? I mean, where did that come from?
I guess visual and communications was always a big thing for me. I loved English and I loved art, and most of the other subjects besides music could be forgotten. Basically, my maths book was full of scribbles and drawings and not much maths. My English teachers always loved me because I loved expressing, and I find that design is just communication. Somebody sent me a logo the other day that they were designing themselves, and they just said, what do you think? And I said, I don't know what you're trying to say. I'd need to know more background, because there's no good or bad logo. It's just what is this logo saying, and is it saying the thing that you want to say to your customers?
Yeah. And so was art a thing when you were at school? Did you go into contests and things like that?
100%. Yes, actually. It was the subject I definitely excelled at most, unsurprisingly. And I did win a couple of contests in school, always kind of strange ones. I remember winning a competition for, we needed to make a piece of clothing out of trash. And I made this hat, and I called it the funeral hat, and it was made out of garbage bags. And I think it was the way I presented it, in that the sadness in the waste in our society was personified in this hat. And I don't know, the judges really enjoyed that. And that one I won. But yeah, I honestly just loved creating. I was constantly drawing as a kid. You couldn't stop me. And that still can't stop me. If there's a pen and paper in front of me, I'm doodling. So.
Yeah. So one thing, you know, graphic design, so the designing things, has that love of art, has that got moved into any other format as well?
I guess I would say, now that design is my profession, I would say my expressive hobby is now dance, which is a little different. And the first time I heard someone describe dance as an art, I wasn't quite on the same page as them, but it is a visual expression, and it is an expression of the music as well. Music was another subject I loved, so I really enjoy melding those two together. It is an art and a music form. So yeah, that's my expressive hobby right now.
Okay. Yeah, dance is definitely an art form, and yeah, being able to, what sort of dance do you do, Kate?
Latin for the most part.
Salsa, okay. Oh, that's definitely art, you know, the whole whole sexy part of it as well.
Indeed. And salsa music, there's so many parts of it to express. Yeah. So it's
Oh, it's really cool, because I suppose when you're designing things and you're using that part of creative, then it is nice to have the breakaway and use the body as the creative, as something different.
And healthy, as you know, I sit at my desk all day and don't have that movement, except for, you know, dance breaks.
No, it's probably an important reminder for all of us to have that bit of balance in what we do, but find something, you know, if you love going to the gym and sitting on a bike or running on a treadmill, then go and do that. I know I used to love spin classes, and that's not my thing anymore either. But finding the things that you love to do to move the body and create your own art like that.
Finding the thing that they can't stop you from doing. That's the key to exercise. I don't think I could go to a gym, but you can't keep me from dancing. So
yeah,
it makes exercise very simple.
Yeah, most definitely. All right, let's get back onto graphic design. Branding.
Yes, sorry, it wasn't very honest.
It's really interesting. And that's the important thing. And I think this is, and it'll definitely come when we're talking about the branding, because we both talk about branding, and yours comes from that design, color palette, who they are, their brand book, you know, that all of that. And mine comes through how people express themselves with their story and their message and their brand that way. But they've got to combine. There's got to be this synchronicity of who you are, and as you said about that person coming to you, and what What are you trying to get across? What are you trying to create?
Which it's beautiful to work with people who've worked with someone such as yourself, Janine, who have a really clear idea of what they want to say, because that makes my job super simple. A lot of people, when I take them through a briefing session, they've actually never thought about what they want to say or who their ideal customer is and how to communicate with that person. So it can be tougher to produce something that really works for somebody who's not yet sure of their communication strategy. But when they have that down and we can create visuals that instantly just appeal to that target audience, that's when the magic happens.
I think, and people tend to start with, okay, let me pick colors to start. I like pink.
Yeah.
And what is wrong with doing that?
Well, if you're your own target market, maybe there's nothing wrong with that. But if you're not, you should definitely not choose your own favorite colors, because they might not be saying what you need to say and they might not be resonating with who you need to talk to. So don't just go from I like blue. And by the way, blue is not blue. There are so many different blues and pinks. So each shade will say something slightly different.
That's important too. Each shade will say something different.
Yes, 100%. Like a sky blue is very kind of whimsical and open, and it says something different than a navy blue, which is much more corporate and somber. So, yeah, color choice is extremely important, and looking at a bit of color theory before you choose colors is really, really great. I've got an article online about a bit of color theory and what each color means. Yeah. Very important.
And that is in that color wheel. So one, it has to resonate with you. I mean, that's an important factor. I certainly wouldn't use yellow or brown or anything like that myself. That just would not fit well. Even green is not something that resonates with me. And for those that are watching rather than listening, and or those that have seen my logo before, it's there's bright orange and navy in it. And they're definitely my colors. So they're colors I wear well, which means important. So I can have clothes in those branding colors.
Janine, but they also orange right now. I can see.
Yeah, a little bit paler, but it definitely is orange. There's a fair bit of orange in my wardrobe. The thing with those colors as well, when I looked at the wheel, you know, I looked at what those colors meant. So do you want to tell us what your version of what those colors meant, and then I'll say what they meant to me.
Sure. So with orange, it's vitality, it's energy, it's friendliness. I think Harmony Day is an orange brand, and that's kind of bringing people together. And the navy, as we said before, it's the more corporate side. So that's kind of expressing the energy you bring and allowing that to be for business owners to take their offering very seriously into the one entity, which is kind of, I think, what you offer, Janine.
Yeah, that was basically it. The because I work with corporates, but it's not just corporates. It's people who recognize that blue is that it's an authority. You're an authority in what you do. So that was part of the thing with the navy. And yes, the orange, other than just loving orange, it very much to do with this is fun. It is something that you can do. It's something you can own, your own authentic self. It's, you know, just have fun with it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that was purpose behind it. But so that's just my colors, but that helps, you know, I would hope when people start looking at going, oh, I wonder what those colors mean.
Yeah, and everyone should think about this when they're designing their own. You'll find actually when you look at other people's logos, you'll get a feeling. If you just look at a bunch of logos and think of the first few things that come into your head, don't judge them, don't think too much, just write down a few words that pop up for you. You'll realize that color psychology, and it's also to do with shapes and different things as well, but color is huge. You might not realize it on a conscious level, but the logo and branding of companies is to make you feel a certain way, and that's what makes you resonate with it. If you're looking for something very serious, and you need a serious person to look after this problem of yours. If they've got, you know, a bright pink and green and, you know, very happy, colorful sort of logo, it's not going to resonate with you for what you need. It might with someone else, and that might be that company's target market, but you're going to see the navy and charcoal and, you know, deep greens or something like this that will actually go, yes, this is much more what I need. These are the people for me.
And a lot of the people you deal with fit within that market, don't they? There's that food and travel and that type of space. Is that something that's just you've attracted, or is it something that you, which is probably manifested anyway, it's more fun? You know, I want to be dealing with people who are projecting that.
It's true. It's partly my background. So when I traveled, I didn't always work in design. It wasn't always an option. Like when I lived in Japan, I don't speak Japanese beyond being able to order food and be polite.
Oh, and it's so easy to order food in Japan. They make facsimiles about all the meals and you just point to it and go.
It's true. You can just look at the pictures or the sculpture of your dish. So Absolutely. There's that. It's quite easy, much easier than I expected to live in Japan without Japanese. Mm-hmm. But, of course, I couldn't work for a Japanese company doing design. So I worked in tourism where English was highly prized and required. So I have a big background in tourism. I've worked in hospitality when I was studying, and throughout the years when I needed just to fill a few months and make a bit of money, they're very easy jobs to get. So I've worked in these industries, so I know them from both sides, and I think I can then serve that market a lot better. And yes, they are fun, and I do really enjoy working with them, and they're the kind of businesses that I support with my own money. Tourism, hospitality. I love going out for an experience rather than shopping, for example. So, yeah, I think all in all, it's the best people that I can give the best service to.
Yeah, that's such an important factor. I'm going to stay on the branding stuff for a bit. Then we're just going to talk about, you know, the things that you've come across that are difficult starting up in business. You are a bit younger than a lot of the people I've interviewed. And it's a different perspective, Kate. You know, it's more, especially coming back to Australia, and it felt like really starting out again during very difficult times and to do what you did, do what you do and what you've done. But talking about the branding part of it, so colour's one thing. What else do we need to worry about?
Okay. Fonts is huge. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing as the colours. Every font has a personality. So when you look at something, you might not realize what kind of font it is, and not many people know much about fonts, but there are different types and classes of fonts, and each will have a different sort of vibe. So you want to make sure that the fonts you're using represent your brand. If you're serious, you don't want to use, this is the example everyone gives, Comic Sans or Impact, which is the meme font. Whenever you see a meme, that is the font Impact. You want to use something that reflects the seriousness of your business. If you are fun, you might want to use a handwritten script. You might want to use something a bit more open with big round kind of shapes in it that really give that open and friendly vibe. So fonts are hugely important. You're then going to have different shapes. And so this is in your logo, and it's going to reflect through all of your marketing as well. And those shapes will tell a story too. So I can see the shape of a woman's face in your logo, Janine, and it's soft and beautiful, and it's offset by this great microphone and these straight, strong lines in your font. It's perfect because it does meld together those two aspects of your business, the fun and the energy and the vibrancy of it. Also that you do what you do for women, so it's got that soft feminine feel as well. And it's offset by kind of your font's very, it's very classic. So this is actually called a Dido, depends how you want to pronounce it, font. Mm-hmm. And it is a very classic and elegant font. So there's a few things in shapes in your logo that are really telling a story as well.
Yeah, thank you. I love the form of the woman in the J. Yeah,
it's beautiful.
And the beauty of having even something as simple as that, the logo without anything else to it, says what it's about, which is, you know, that was, had some good advice on that. It was very clever.
Fantastic. Yeah. Yeah, beautiful logo.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you very much. So fonts, colours, fonts?
Fonts, colours, shapes. You'll find things. So I guess I want to talk about brand and visual brand. So your brand is everything. It's your personality. It's the way you give customer service. It's your integrity. It's your products. It's literally everything about you and your business. So if you think of brand as the person, the full person, the visual brand might be what they're wearing or how they present themselves with a smile or with a serious expression. Your logo might be something more like a hat you always wear. If you've got a hat and it's just your style and you always wear that, you know, everyone knows that guy who's got like a fedora and he's never seen without it, right? Mm-hmm. So that's his logo. Yeah. So within your brand, your visual brand, so your clothing, there's going to be a lot of things, and your logo doesn't have to express all of these. Some of the most beautiful and effective logos are just a font. They are just a typeface that has really expressed what you need to express and can then be used with so many other elements and be really versatile. So other things in your visual brand might be the photography you use, or maybe you use illustrations, which give off a completely different vibe. The way those photos are shot or the style of illustration tells a whole story in itself. There's a beautiful brand, I can't remember. They have a very simple motif, and I think it's just two letters. Actually, if you look at Warner Brothers, it's a really good example. They've just rebranded to a very simplified motif of the WB, which is their shield, and they use it as a sort of silhouette over all of their amazing graphics and the from the animations that they have, and it's so effective and it's so recognizable, even though it's so simple.
I see all of this, you know, it's so important to have that understanding, but as we sort of said right from the beginning, it's got to come from you and your who you are. And often when people are starting out in business, there's a lot of challenges coming at them that's, you know, around their belief system, and, you know, so they're trying to do this outside design thing, but there's a lot of other stuff going on. And I know that when you first came back, there was a lot going on for you as well, wasn't there?
Definitely. My goodness. I mean, it was a bad year for everyone. I don't know anyone who's like, 2020, that was the best. Had a great time. So I came back and I guess I was, you know, going, oh, this will all blow over in a couple of months. I still had time left on my working holiday visa. I was living in Chile and I came home because it just was a bit too much. Family was calling me back. So I thought, you know, I'll give this a few months and I will be back over in Chile. I'll find another job. It'll be fine. So I worked for a year, back to my tourism and customer service background. I worked for a season at Thredbo, is a ski resort in southern New South Wales, and I finished that season and the pandemic still hadn't finished, so I went traveling around New South Wales, which I'd never done because I had other places I could go. But I saw some incredible stuff traveling around New South Wales for 2 months, and when that finished, the pandemic still hadn't finished.
What's happening here?
I know.
And the borders in Australia were closed. I don't think other countries close borders between, you know, the different states or anywhere. They just, but here, you know, we closed off. We don't like those New South Wales people. They're not coming to Queensland, that's for sure.
Yes. Well, eventually that border did open briefly and I took the chance to run up here and made Brisbane my home. But I did the same thing. I thought, well, this will blow over soon. So I got a job in hospitality and I got a part-time job thinking I'm going to start my business. I'm going to work on the design part of it in the spare time I have working part-time. And what I realized was I could live on a part-time wage and enjoy my life a lot. So I didn't start the business. And it wasn't till a bit of a crisis of, I guess, identity and knowing that this wasn't all I could do, and I actually quit the job completely and really went out on a limb to start the business. All in, all my chips were in, and I had to make it work because that was all I had. And that was a process. It's been the most incredible personal development process I think I've ever been through. It's building your own business there's nothing else like it.
It's not for chickens, that's for sure. there's processes.
And yes.
Discovering them as you go along.
It's true. But even if you feel like a chicken, it can turn you into an eagle.
Yeah. I like that analogy. Yeah.
If I needed help when I started. I actually had a coach, and that was, I talked to him, I think just before Christmas, and I said, Dale, if you hadn't come along at just the right moment, I would be back working in hospitality or at the very least for another company in design again. So I think it's incredibly important to get help if you need it, if you're feeling too much like a chicken, like I did.
Yeah,
having somebody on your team is incredibly powerful. Yeah.
Talking to my last guest on the last podcast, and we were talking about courage and having courage to, and she was talking about, it's so easy and nice to sit in the cave and put the blankie around us and just stay there, whether that is, in a predictable job or literally curled up in front of the TV instead of, there's a networking event tonight, that will make a difference, or, is to step outside the cave and go, okay, this is going to take some courage to do this.
Yes.
And all I can do is one step after the other and learn things, getting a coach. How clever are you? That is so important to do that. Absolutely vital to do that and to learn from others, however people do that. That's the beauty of the podcast, is there's so much talent on the people that I've interviewed.
Yes.
People can learn so much for free just by listening to their ideas. And that's that whole, okay, here I am now.
Yeah.
Buy from me.
I'm doing it. Yes. And that's terrifying. The imposter syndrome. Everyone has it, just by the way. It was incredible when I started. I landed this job, and it was for another marketing agency, Carrot Collective. And they're international, so they employ people such as myself who freelance. They have a really great system, actually. But one of my first jobs in my full-time design business was to design a website for another creative agency. And
right, okay.
I was freaking out.
Who are you? Who are you to think you know how to do that?
Exactly. Who do I think I am to design a website for these guys who are so creative and amazing? One of the directors is a really great friend of mine, and he, incredibly creative guy, has so many wonderful ideas. And I'm just, this is who gave me the job. And I just was at a loss. I'm like, how can I impress this person enough to pull this off?
Mm.
And I mean, it came down to going through the process that I have always gone through and pushing. It was a lot of pushing. This was a really uncomfortable process. I did have my coach at that point, and he had to a couple of times just tell me, no, you're doing the right thing. Keep going. Mm. And that I can't believe how much that helps, just to have someone say, no, you're doing it right. Keep doing it.
That's
great. Like giving up.
And asking for help. I mean, that's not something that a lot of people are comfortable with. Really interesting. I was hired to go into a marketing company and do some training on communication. And the communication was about, one of the problems they had was people not asking for help. That the, you've done the degree. What's wrong with you? You should know how to do this.
Yeah. And the thing is, no one knows everything. Even in within your own expertise, your own industry, you don't know everything. It's wonderful to collaborate, but it's also scary because you risk looking like you don't know what you're meant to be doing or what you're talking about. I think it's one of those things I'm striving for, is to be comfortable in myself and with my value and what I can bring to people, that when I don't know something, I take it as a learning opportunity rather than as a, oh no, I need to hide from that question. And there's nothing wrong with saying, I actually don't know much about that. I'm going to research it. I'm going to find out, or I'm going to find somebody who does, who can bring that expertise to the table for us.
Yeah. And on all levels, that's just incredibly important to recognize when you do need to ask for help. And it's not just the help of the skill level. It's the emotional help that we need to have as well. When we're working for ourselves, there's often nobody there patting you on the shoulder, as you said, you know, that coach saying, you're doing the right thing here. That's giving, you know, there's people that are in your house, but they don't understand. And one of the things that I found more than anything going into my own business is people who have had jobs and been employed all the time have no understanding at all. And I'm not being, they just don't get it. That every single day you've got to turn up, and this is my sales reps when I was GM, they were on commission only, which is what you are in your own business. But every day you've got to turn up, you've got to create business for yourself, and you've got to deal with all of the issues. And if you're working for yourself in your own business, you're having to deal with that alone.
Yeah.
And it's a burden to do that if you don't get help.
I was speaking to a friend and he's like, he also has his own business. I know what I need to do. This is, you know, I need to make a list of 100 people and call all of them. Mm-hmm. And he said, if I was working for someone else and they told me, go and do this, I would do it. No problems whatsoever. When you're doing it for yourself, all of these other things come up for you.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, this is just me. I'm going out and asking people to work with me. Not my company, not this group of people, not my boss, me. And so you have to be able to back yourself 100%. And that is really hard.
Yeah. And
that is the growth in business, I think, is learning to back yourself and learning to, I guess it's a self-acceptance and self-love practice, honestly.
Yeah, and 60% of businesses fail within the first 3 years. And it's because of that. It's because they're not making enough sales or there's not enough business. But the reason there often isn't is exactly what you said, not backing themselves enough to go pick up the phone and make a phone call because I am worthwhile talking to, and the product or service that I offer will be of value to these people. And that's what I teach people to do all the time, is to do it. But I know how hard it is to do it for yourself compared to working for someone else. It's a completely different mind switch, because if they say no to the business that you're working for, they're saying no to the business. If they're saying no to you and your brand, well, it's, well, they're saying no to you personally, and it cuts.
You feel that rejection a lot more keenly.
Absolutely. I'm glad you brought up that point, because that is such a big deal when people are in their own business. And how do you deal with that and recognize that it's not a no, it's a not at this moment, or I need to learn some sales skills so I can close the sales and have those proper conversations and know how to do that and do it better next time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing is, you may not get a second chance at doing that. So whatever you do, get coaches, get, you know, read books, figure it out. And I know when I used to teach aerobics, when I first started teaching many moons ago, I worked at all the places I didn't want to work at.
Interesting. Why?
And then when I had a year's experience under the belt, I went to work at the places I wanted to work at. It's just so not blowing it and blowing opportunities with the ones that are important. Yeah.
Yes, getting your experience somewhere that you knew you could excel.
Yep, learning. And practicing, and then and applying those skills that were learned and honing them, and then going out and going, okay, I can do this well now.
Yeah, well, before you run.
Yeah. And it's important with anything that you do. I mean, you have to, I was listening to something today about Novak Djokovic, just how much he knows exactly what he eats and drinks and how he moves and training he does and, you know, everything he does. He's in control of that. But how long has he been doing it? And how much practice has he had to reach that level? It takes 10,000 hours of doing what you're doing to become expert in it. 10,000 hours when you divide that up and try and figure out how many hours that is, it's not just hours working in a job, it's hours doing exactly what you're doing.
Yeah, and listening to podcasts, learning, practicing. It's not just the professional experience, it's everything else.
Absolutely.
Behind that.
Yeah, and that 10,000 hours, that makes genius level at what you do. So the Beatles, when they were in Hamburg and when they were performing 7 days a week, you know, 3 or 4 shows a day continuously, that was their 10,000 hours. They honed that skill. Yeah. And all of the great entertainers or sports people or business people have done exactly that. So that's the thing is, you know, and recognizing for people as well, give yourself a break when you step into your own business.
Yeah. Yeah, you can't be a genius immediately.
just give yourself time to learn and hone those skills. We overestimate what we can achieve in 12 months, in 1 year, but we underestimate what we can achieve in 5 years. So, you know, really recognizing what you can do and get done, and then, you know, hopefully you've got the financial backing to be able to make mistakes and take it slow getting into a new business.
Yes, because enjoying the process I think is essential for the business.
That's a big point. I'm glad you brought that up, enjoying the process,
because it's not going to be a straight up trajectory. It's going to be ups and downs and growth and realizing that you need this and that and you need to learn something new. And that's just part of it. And if you can accept that early on, you're going to have a much better time and you'll be able to go the long haul.
Yes, the overnight successes are very far and few between.
Yeah. And they're not really overnight. It's just the part
that you have. No, very, very few overnight, you know, 20 years of practice to become an overnight success. It's quite a different space. Yeah, be realistic about what you can achieve. And I know, you know, we've been talking, you said in the past about something else. You said asking yourself when you go to do something, you know, that courage to go out. Side the cave is why, to ask yourself, why do you fear this?
Yes, and that can be so interesting. I think I've learned when I feel uncomfortable with something, I need to do this more, as we all do. When I find something really hard or even boring, or if I have some resistance to it, if I really look underneath that boredom or that hardness or that this is not what I'm good at, there's usually a belief under there that's actually stopping me from doing that. Mm. So when I first started my business, I had this excuse like, oh, I'm just not motivated. And I'm like, okay, well, I was reading a Joe Dispenza book and I'm like, okay, I can change that about myself according to this guy. So I meditated for a month. I meditate most days, and I meditated on a month on I am super motivated. And by the end of the month, I believed I was motivated and I was still having this block. It was still hard to start doing the things that I needed to do. And I realized under it all was the actual belief that I'm not good enough, that I shouldn't do it because I will fail, that people aren't going to benefit from me doing what I'm doing. And that was what was actually stopping me from doing all these things. Because I didn't want to come up against that.
Yeah, and that's such a powerful belief. It really is. And the other one that sort of progresses from there is, okay, so what if I am successful?
Equally as scary.
Oh, what'll happen then?
Yeah, but also if you can channel that excitement, if you can turn it around, go, what if I am good enough?
Yeah.
What if it works?
What if I am good? That's a beautiful way to turn that around. What if I am good enough? Because there's often no evidence to that belief.
Yeah. Well, there is, but you ignore it because you're stuck in this thought pattern that you're not.
Mm.
But
I mean, there's no evidence to the belief that you're not good enough.
Oh, it's true. Yeah. 100%. Yeah. And you should regularly look at evidence that. I know people who keep a folder of emails when people say something nice about them or their work, they file those away. Now that I have a Google profile, I can look at my reviews.
Those reviews are always nice to look at and share.
That's always helpful. You can talk to a friend, just tell a friend, look, I feel terrible. Can you tell me all the nice things about me for a couple of minutes?
And the thing is, again, what I found is people who are in jobs go, oh, yeah, right, okay, fine. Whereas people who are in businesses will go, oh, isn't that awesome? They really resonate with how important it is to be, and they had to be recognized. And we're talking, the last conversation I had with somebody was talking about that recognition from the outside, but also recognition from the inside. Because that, and she equated it to the outside recognition being very thin fuel, whereas the internal recognition of achievement is a much heavier, more dense fuel, and it goes a much further than the thin fuel.
You can build.
Yeah. It was. It's still nice getting those comments, I turn up to different events, but. Some of them are places where people have the opportunity to thank the people they've worked with. And I was at something this morning and I had quite a few people just reach out and say thank you in the room full of other people, just as what they had achieved. And, yes, it is very nice. It's very heartwarming to know that you can change people's lives. Mm-hmm. And one woman said before she worked with me, she had a can't do attitude. And now she has a can-do attitude. And that was just, I love that she speaks well and is comfortable in sales and blah, 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 all of those skill base. But for me, that just meant everything.
Yeah, because that's changing your life. We go and get a coach to help us with our business, and we don't realize that work is actually much more internal. The business is kind of the external expression of your internal growth.
Yeah.
I mean, getting good at sales means tackling your am I good enough beliefs. Mm. And when you tackle it, that results in money, which doesn't seem like a direct correlation, but I think it is.
It is. Yeah. You have a little win and go, oh, that was cool. That was easy. Yeah. That was cool.
Yeah. And then it builds.
Yes. The momentum.
I once had someone tell me if you're not feeling like you're doing well, every night write down three things that you're proud of yourself for that day.
Yeah.
And you know what? If the best thing you did that day was make yourself an excellent cup of tea, write it down because it's actually just this positive reinforcement.
Yeah.
And it rewires your brain to think more positively and to believe in yourself. And baby steps are sometimes what it takes.
Yeah, most definitely. That's really good advice, because the little synopsis in our brains go looking for things like what we're doing. And if they find more positive, they'll connect with more positive and really changes it up. So, Kate, I know we've covered, the business branding thing and that's your space, but it was great looking at, you stepping into your business, because I know a lot of people have those same sort of issues and questions and things. So thank you very much for sharing that as well. If somebody wants to get in touch with you to work with you or find out what you do to help them develop their brand or develop them as they are, branding themselves, how can they find you?
I'd love to hear from anyone looking to do that. You can find me at my website is Rove Creative. That's ROV for Victor E creative.com.au. Reach out to me. I'd love to chat.
Yeah, excellent. And please do that. I'm working with Kate on another project with a few of us. We're called Morning Tea Marketing Misses, and we chat about different things within our own expertise and share things out there. We work through January, and there's up on YouTube under that Morning Tea Marketing Misses, and there's all different concepts on planning. And then for the next month, being Valentine's Day for February, there'll be interviews and conversations that are on relationships. We'll be doing this for a few months and just sharing our knowledge, our understanding, our beliefs in short, you know, 10, 20 minutes, little episodes, which we're enjoying immensely doing. Yes. And getting to know.
I'm learning a lot from you and the other ladies we've got on board. It's,
really yeah, and that's the beauty of doing everything and listening to the podcasts and me, you know, as host, I'm learning all the time. So thank you, Kate, and all of your information will be in the course notes, of course, so people can find Kate Smith from Rove Creative. Thank you.
Thank you for having me, Janine.
Welcome. And that's another episode of the We Are Women podcast. I am Janine Vosper, your host. You can find me on my website, janinevosper.com. Please, I'd love to have a conversation with you, book a business call, and we can just discuss how I might be able to help you, you know, create the business and life of your dreams. And you know what, if I can't, there's someone I guarantee I can recommend. Have a fantastic day, week, month, year, wherever you are in the world, and enjoy. Bye-bye for now.
So, do you feel stuck in a rut in business? Visit speechperfect.com.au and download Janine's free ebook to avoid the 5 most common stumbling blocks women face in business. It's jam-packed full of tips to overcome the barriers that could be holding you back from the success that you dream your business will be. We would love you to leave a review of today's episode and share this podcast with other women in need of entrepreneurial inspiration. Subscribe to the next episode now and join the We Are Women community.